Yes, indeed. Welcome back, Gwen and Chris. Minus the Chris, Matt Scraby and Tony Gwynn Jr. here. Getting you set before Sam Levitt takes over the pregame. But right now, is our guest ready?
Yes, he is.
Oh, well, all right. Joining us.
It's kind of funny, right? When Adam's on the board, guests come on time. When I'm on the board, it's like 7 minutes late.
Yeah, take it. Well, you know, I'm not going to say anything. Anyway, Kirk Kenny joins us here, San Diego Union Tribune. Kirk, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Hey, Scraby, you might want to keep that note to yourself.
just shooting himself down. It's hilarious.
Don't bring it up in your annual evaluation.
Oh, yeah, that's where I'm good at.
Chris isn't here. I didn't say it. He's just shooting on himself right now. I don't even understand what's going on. Kirk, a lot going on right now, man. We'll start with just the conference stuff.
Okay.
There is there seems to be a race right now for who can fill their conference with the level that they need it to, as well as the amount of teams they need it to be at. Mountain West, I don't know. What's going on here between the Pac-12 and the Mountain West?
Well, it's been going back and forth for, a couple weeks now on who – well, let's start. So the Pac-12, any conference has to have 8 teams in order to be eligible for the playoffs and such, and the Pac-12 reloaded with 4 Mountain West schools a couple weeks ago. Then they added another one this week, Utah State. But that only gives them 7. They thought they'd maybe get some AAC teams. That fell through, and so they were going to go tap into the Mountain West again. And Mountain West now has secured the rest of its team. So they're at 7. Mountain West is at 7, and you got to be at 8. Obviously, they're going to backfill somehow. And they aren't going to do it now. The Pac-12 is not going to be able to fill at this point with as good of teams as they thought. And Mountain West, I think they'll backfill with some schools from some of the other Group of 5 conferences. So we'll just see how it plays out.
Well, Kirk, what do you think? Does one have an advantage over the other at this point? I mean, it certainly seems like the Mountain West was basically able to keep the teams in the fold by the exit money that they're going to have from the teams that are leaving. How is that sustainable on the Mountain West side? Will that keep those teams there? Does one side have an advantage right now?
Seems like the Mountain West, because it's funny, it seems like the leverage shifts from hour to hour or day to day. And the Mountain West had all that money now from the Pac-12 for the poaching fees and the exit fees. So they seem to be in the driver's seat now because they could throw around money to keep their schools intact. A month and a half ago, it seemed like the Pac-12 was in more of the driver's seat because they had a pretty good war chest for them to kind of navigate how they wanted to. But, you know, from one moment to the next, it just seems like something that they're counting on falls through either conference and then something else happens. So I think there's still a lot to be determined. And one thing is the Pac-12 this week. Another thing is they said they're going to sue to not have to pay the poaching fees. So I'll be interested to see how that plays out. As far as I know, that they had some good lawyers read over their contract before they signed it. So I don't know on what basis they're going to try and get out of that.
We're talking to Kirk Kenny here of the San Diego Union Tribune, and this is probably a question you can't answer, but when are these conferences and these people at the top of the NCAA football, athletics, all that stuff, when are they going to realize that none of us care about any of this and we just want to see them play football?
Well, that's a good question. You know, it's too bad. I've been doing this a while, and I'm just kind of exhausted from all the movement and the different things going on. It's like it takes so much away from the game.
Yeah.
But I've told several people years and years ago, I worked for a guy, and he said kind of the American way is to take something good and make it great and then take it a step further and ruin it. And that's just, I feel like we're on that road for college football and all college sports for that matter. And it saddens me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, the effort to be perfect, you know, it seems like it has kind of eaten itself in some ways, which isn't as fortunate. All right, let's shift gears. Kirk Kenny joins us, San Diego Union Tribune. Danny O'Neill was out against Cal because of injury. Who's going to quarterback this week?
Danny O'Neill.
He's back.
I found out he's going to be back this week, and it's, you know, this really sets up as an interesting game, and we'll start with Danny O'Neill and that news. He injured his knee 3 weeks ago against Oregon State. He finished that game, but then they determined he wasn't their best option for the Cal game, so they started the backup, Javance Johnson, and he did fairly well, but they lost that game. But now they feel like Danny's well enough that he can be their best option for this game. I'm most intrigued. It's a left knee injury, and he's been wearing a brace on it, and watching him in practice, he's moving around pretty well, but I still, when I see that brace, it just, you're not the guy you are when you are completely healthy. So I'm most interested to see how he gets around with that brace on.
Yeah, that is interesting. Because he does kind of move a little bit, right? He has a little bit of running in his game, or is that something
Definitely, that he's
going to have to go away from?
Yeah, I mean, he's not Lamar Jackson, but it's definitely a weapon they can use to, you know, especially to go get a first down or, you know, just give the defense something else to consider. So if that is taken away, you know, we'll see how well the Central Michigan defense does at pinning its ears back and coming after him. I don't know. You know, we'll see also, is there a quicker trigger maybe to bring the other guy in if they start to feel like Danny just isn't quite game ready.
Yeah. Kirk Kenny joins the San Diego Union-Tribune. Kirk, the Aztecs are 1-2 on the season. Where are you at? What have you seen from the team in three games? I know three games is an early check-in point, but you know, given the fact that they haven't had their quarterback, especially last week. I mean, where is this team at right now? Is there some progression being seen, at least from the staff's standpoint?
You know, I saw progress in the second half of the first game when they scored 42 points. And that's about the most extended period we've seen where this offense has shown what it can do. Because between injuries and especially penalties, Aztecs they lead the nation in penalties per game with 13. And that's taken away a lot of their big plays the offense could have made some plays. It even took away a defensive touchdown when they had a block in the back.
Yeah.
But a lot of those penalties, majority of the penalties were on the offensive line, either with false starts or holds and things. And so they've had 2 weeks to kind of sort through that and maybe see if they can clean that up a little bit. And I think that's going to be the key for the Aztecs offense, is just not shooting themselves in the foot.
Talking to Kirk Kenny of the San Diego Union Tribune about Aztecs football. They are playing Central Michigan this weekend, and I like to be dramatic, Kirk. You know that I like to frame things as if it's like the last thing that this person is ever going to do on this earth, but are we too early in the Sean Lewis head coach career to say this game is a must win?
Yes.
I mean, I know the answers to these questions. I just want to see if I'm going to get something different.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's the short answer. The longer one is, and again, we're in a society now where they want to make a call after one play, one quarter, one game. And, you know, these things take a little while to play out. I mean, look at the Padres are a great example. I had people pulling their hair out in May, like, you know, the world's coming to an end, and then we get past the All-Star break, and things are clicking. And, you know, the same thing applies here, and I think in football. There's still a lot of football to be played, and let's just see, you know, once the Aztecs kind of get a few more games under their belt, which way this is going to go.
Patience, Kirk Kenny says, everyone.
I mean, they haven't even started conference yet, right?
Scraby's ready for must wins right now.
Ready for must wins.
Kirk, thank you for your time, man. We appreciate you.
No problem. Glad to do it.
Kirk Kenny, San Diego Union Tribune, and Scraby, come on, dog. We're 1-2, dog. How can it possibly be a must win for? Like,
do you really want me to answer that question?
Yes, please.
Okay. It possibly could be a must win for them.
Do I really want me to answer this question? Yes, please.
People
please
ask me, this. Are you really serious about your questions? And the answer is somewhat. And the reason is because, you know, we do live in that society where the last thing that you do is the thing that we judge. And Sean Lewis came in here, and personally, he's going to have to go through this whole year. For me, he's going to have to go through this whole year, and it's going to be a transition year for the program. But I think a lot of people are thinking, hey, you cannot start 1-3 in your debut with the Aztecs.
Yes, you can start 1-3 in your debut with the Aztecs. Stop it. Yes, you can. There's no rule saying you're not allowed to start 1-2 or you have to be fired.
I didn't say he was going to be fired, but 1-3 is not the place that the Aztecs want to be.
He's not even there yet, though.
I know. He has to play Central Michigan tomorrow.
So can he at least have the game first before we start saying 1-3? That's all I'm saying, dog.
Sorry, I don't know if you were talking to me, but I had to run back to my seat. So we're playing musical chairs in the studio. There's a lot going on.
Is that on camera? You running back to your seat?
It was just nothing there for a little bit, and then Adam came back in the room, so that's why I wasn't there. But
I definitely was talking to you, but I don't remember what I said now. So it's all.
Well, you were probably just saying that I was ridiculous for something because I thought that the Aztecs should have won.
Oh yeah. It was counting losses. Exactly, you're counting losses before they actually happen.
But let me go see if the chat's crushing me right now.
Why? Why do you need to see that?
I'm a sucker for punishment.
Yes, you are. You want to see it.
Well, someone said the other day, don't you want to go on the Discord, the Gwynn and Chris Discord, and look at everything real time? And I'm like, no, I definitely don't want to go on the Discord.
Wait, what is that?
It's like it's a new chat system. It's like a new chat thing. It's not new, actually. It's been around for a long time, but you can connect with people and you can basically have a long conversation. Like the YouTube chat is on a different app, but you could do it all day, every day.
Was that on video games at some point?
It was kind of for video games.
For video games? Okay, I do remember that.
Yeah.
Never used it before, but.
No, you have. You have, because Adam had us download it when
that's
COVID.
That's where I remember it from. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Oof.
Did you just get a shiver up your stomach?
I did. Like, that was like. That made me sick. All right, let's get to break. I have to get myself ready to head to the field. I will rejoin a little bit later, but
yes,
I will. I need to step away. So let's get you to break. When we come back, Scrape, what you got? Daily Gambit?
Not the Daily Gambit. I am going to be talking about some of the things that the Padres we were talking about earlier, and I'm scrolling down, which is. Like, I guess I want to look ahead a little bit to the playoff rotation because Eno Saris said something on Ben and Woods yesterday that I thought was pretty good. So I'm going to bring that up and talk about it.
Yeah, probably a better time to bring it up.
I think you would agree with him on this one, but yes.
All right. More Gwynn and Chris on the other side. More Scraby on the other side.
That's great to be back with you here in the Odyssey Palace. This is Gwynn and Chris, 97.3 The Fan. Tony Gwynn Jr. will be back in about 20 minutes for the countdown, which I'll give you the topic now. It's our top five. We love the baseball postseason. So that will be at 3:40. And then we will have him back again for the Big Five at 4:40. And also, Chris will be back next Wednesday from his vacation. So he will be right in the thick of things when he gets back because the Padres are likely, I say likely because I do not want to jinx it and be accused of jinxing it, but I say likely will have a home playoff series in the wild card. So that would be a huge change from 2 years ago, and that would be a huge advantage for the Padres. We already know that the Padres have great home field advantage, so I want to see this crowd get going during a wild card series where all of the games are in one stadium. You don't have to travel back and forth. I think that's going to be something that the Padres can lean on a little bit. And so we'll talk about that as the show goes along. You know, Sammy left yesterday, and he is here in the building. And I just am not really a fan of his right now. And if you watched the show yesterday, you know why. And it was because he threw me under the bus. And he threw me under the bus to the point where I wanted to cry. No, I didn't want to cry at all. But Sam Levitt is in the building, and he is going to be on Sammy versus the Fans here coming up at 4 o'clock. If he can make it, he has an interview. But Sammy versus the Fans also, he's going to join us at 5 o'clock. I'm willing to let everything go, Sam. I'm willing to let everything go. All right. I said before the break that we're going to talk about what Eno Saris said on Bennett Woods, and he was talking about they asked him about the playoff rotation for the Padres. And Eno Saris, if you don't know, he writes for The Athletic. He's really good on the pitching stuff. He has a lot of different analytics and stats. But the morning show, Bennett Woods asked him for who he thought should be the first or the game one starter for the Padres.
This is my game one starter, you know. And I think that informs something, because if he comes out and wins it, then I can do a much more traditional sort of, we're just going to do the rotation after that, you know? If he loses it, then a lot of this discussion goes out the window, because then it's Joe Musgrove for two, and he puts a batter on, you know, there is no tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it could be just everybody in the second game. So, you know, I do think that King is probably slots in fourth, just maybe for the seniority's sake. But in terms of quality, I think I might have it Cease, King, Musgrove, Darvish. But they're all, I think, like top 25, top 30 type pitchers for me. So the difference is fine. And it is a little bit more about who's willing to come out of the pen. And what happens, I think, in game one. But easily for me, Dylan Cease starts game one.
This is kind of surprising to me, because I guess I just always assumed that, in my mind, Yu Darvish would start game one. And I don't really know why I put the emphasis on Yu Darvish, because he just came back a couple weeks ago from his extended stay away from the team. But Dylan Cease, to me, is probably the right choice. And the reason he's the right choice is because we've seen him at times this year be one of the better pitchers in all of baseball. He has over 200 strikeouts this year. He has a no-hitter this year. There was a stretch of baseball where he gave up like three hits over three games. He's been doing crazy stuff all season long. And since game one of the wild card is so important to win, because you get out to that lead, you don't really have that pressure of losing the second game and going home, I think Dylan Cease gives you the best opportunity to put up zeros on the board in game one. Now, if they do need Dylan Cease to pitch somewhere else, I also think he works in the second spot. Say they have Joe Musgrove or Yu Darvish go game one. Dylan Cease could be a stopper for them in game two if they lose that game one. I think Dylan Cease is a guy that you put in the spot in the rotation for the playoffs where you know you need to get a win, which is game one or game two. But game one sets the tone for the rest of the series, and game one of the wild card series is so important because it's only a three-game series. We saw this in 2022. Padres won the first game with Yu Darvish on the mound. Then they lost the second game, and then they came back with Joe Musgrove on the mound, and they won the third game. They come home, and they play the Dodgers. And we know that when the pressure is at its highest, I want the guys who have done it all year with all the pressure on them, and that would be Dylan Cease. And Paul said something on the roundtable yesterday, because he mentioned that Michael King was his, let me go back to, I wrote this down. He mentioned that his order would be Cease, Michael King, Joe Musgrove, and Yu Darvish. And I don't know that Michael King is going to make the rotation. And we're going to hear from Mike Schilt at 5:20. I did ask him about possible bullpen things going on with the playoffs. But, you know, we didn't get much of an answer because, obviously, we're not there yet. So we don't really know. But I liked what Paul said yesterday on the roundtable. If Michael King is not a starter for the Padres, which he, in my mind, is likely not to be, he should be the first guy out of the bullpen if a pitcher struggles. Because Michael King has that experience out of the bullpen, and Michael King has that attitude that he's going to go out there and do whatever the team asks him to do. And Michael King also is a guy who has pitched so well this year. He might even be the Padres' best pitcher this year outside of Dylan Cease. He probably is the Padres' best pitcher this year outside of Dylan Cease. Michael King has been a revelation, and he has done a lot this year to prove that he can handle these big time spots. And I guess there's no real substitute for pitching in the playoffs, the actual playoffs. I guess there's no real substitute to, like, kind of figure out what you're going to be like. But I can only assume that Michael King is going to rise to the occasion. He's done it all season long. And we had questions coming into the year about Michael King. He's answered all those questions, which some of the questions were, how many innings can he go? Is he going to be able to start the entire season? How is he going to be as a starter in his first season? And he's answered all those questions with, he's going to be just fine. And he's going to go the entire season, and he's going to strike out a lot of guys. And so if Michael King comes out of the bullpen, say they get in trouble with the starter in the third inning, you have a guy that can go 3-4 innings if you need him to. And sometimes you need those guys in the playoff series to eat a chunk of innings. And who else would you want out there than Michael King? I don't know that I want anyone else out there out of the bullpen for like a long relief type of role than Michael King. You have Brian Hoeing, who he was in the game last night. Brian Hoeing is a great pitcher for the Padres. I mean, he's been a good pitcher for the Padres, but I don't necessarily... It's the word trust is a weird word for me to use, but I don't necessarily think that he's the right guy when, say, the Padres are down 3 runs after 3 innings or something like that. And I know that I'm putting out things out there and I'm knocking on all the wood, but these are the things that they have to prepare for, and they are preparing for. But it was interesting to hear Eno Saris be so emphatic that Dylan Cease is his guy, hands down. And I'm gonna listen to Eno Saris. Every time that he's predicted something, he's pretty spot on what he says. So if he's saying it, then there is some truth behind it. And the rotation in the wild card series is probably the hardest to figure out, because you got to get 5 guys down to 3, and then you got to put guys in the bullpen, and then you got to... You have to figure out who you want to take off the roster. And side note, if you missed it earlier, we asked Mike Schilt about Ha-Seon Kim, and he didn't have positive things to say about the recovery timetable for Ha-Seon Kim. So to me, I'm planning on not having Ha-Seon Kim this entire postseason. So there's they don't have to worry about that roster spot right there. You know, he's already on the IL and all that, but still. And Adam has, Mike Schilt talking about Ha-Seon Kim. What is the status of Ha-Seon Kim and when he could potentially rejoin the team?
Yeah, you know what? I wish you had really super positive news. He's just hadn't been able to be able to get over that hump with his throwing. The hitting's not a problem. That part's good. But, you know, him being able to consistently throw with any aggressive, anything behind it, and intensity is just hadn't happened. So, we're still weighing what's taking place, but right now he's not in a spot where we can count on him in the very near future.
Mike, is there a point where it's too late and that window closes?
There is. Okay. We may be getting there. We'll know something here, sooner than later.
So there you go. Straight from the Padres manager mouth. It doesn't bode well for the future in my mind. And you also have to think about whether or not Ha-Seon Kim has actually played his last game in a Padres uniform because of the injury. And he has a contract situation coming up after this year where he gets to choose. And there are people saying that he is not going to return to the Padres. And that's still yet to be seen. We don't know, and who knows what this injury does for the future prospects of a contract. But Ha-Seon Kim's going to make money. He's going to make a lot of money, and he probably deserves it for the defensive side. And I don't know that the Padres are going to be willing to pay that money. So we may have seen the last of Ha-Seon Kim. Now, as Tony said earlier, he's going to be in the dugout throughout the playoff series, so his vibes can be there, but he's not going to be on the field. And I this is going to sound harsh, but I do think it helps the Padres make a decision they didn't want to make, which would be moving Xander Bogaerts out of shortstop, or even have, I mean, the team hasn't really skipped a beat since Ha-Seon Kim has gone on the IL, and that's not a knock on him as a player. It's just kind of a fact. And so would you want to put Ha-Seon Kim back in there, mess up the flow of everything right now? And really, if he's injured and he's not going to be the playoffs, it just makes things way easier for the Padres to make a decision. Last thing before we head to break, someone on the chat said that Dylan Cease, hell no. He's too, you'd never know what you're going to get. So his past five starts, Dylan Cease, his last one last night, two nights ago, five innings, gave up three runs. He struck out four. We know that it wasn't his best start, and he said as much after the game. But if you look at the two previous starts, you can see why he could be the guy to lead the rotation in the wild card series. He went 8 1/3. Against the Astros. He went 6 against the Giants. No runs given up. We know how well he pitched against the Astros. I mean, he was Xander Bogaerts' throw away from a complete game there. He went 6 innings against he pitched back-to-back against the Giants. So he went 6 innings each against the Giants. He had 10 strikeouts in San Francisco. Dylan Cease is a strikeout artist. Dylan Cease is a great pitcher, and I feel very comfortable with Dylan Cease if he is the game one pitcher for the Padres. I am Matt Scraby. This is Gwynn and Chris. And when we get back, Tony's going to rejoin me, and we're going to do the countdown, which is our top five of something. And this time, our top five things we like about the postseason. And let me tell you, my list is very different from Tony's list. So, countdown. We get back. 97.3 The Fan. Matt Scraby back with you here in the Odyssey Palace. 97.3 The Fan getting ready for a final regular season series for the Padres against the Diamondbacks out there in Arizona. Game starts at 6:40. Sam Levitt has your EcoWater Padres, SoCal Padres pregame show at 5:40. And we're going to be doing the countdown here in just a second. Top five things that we love about postseason baseball. And my list is a lot different from Tony's list because Tony actually got to play in the postseason. So I've never really spent much time on a postseason baseball field. So mine is more feelings and Tony is more like actually being there. So you'll get both sides. You'll get the fan side, you get Tony's side. We talked to Mike Schilt a little bit earlier. So if you would like to go listen to that, you can go on YouTube and go back to the very beginning of the show. He joined us right out the gate at 2 p.m. And you can go on the YouTube all the way back to the beginning. You can hear that. And we're also be playing that for you at 5:20, and there was a lot talked about, a lot of questions about focusing on this weekend versus focusing on the playoffs and Ha-Seong Kim and some of the other kind of minor details that are happening right now for the Padres going into that final regular season series. And you know, I saw in the chat that because I said last segment, I said that Ha-Seong Kim might mess with the flow of the team. And if they were to bring him back, and someone brought up, Podzilla actually on the chat brought up that's what they said about Fernando when he was coming back. Now, personally, I did not say that about Fernando, and Podzilla, he recognized that, but it is ridiculous to me for anyone, you were to have Fernando Tatis Jr. in your lineup, that you would get worse, or because he was in the lineup, the team is the flow is messed up. That doesn't happen with Fernando Tatis Jr. And we've seen him ever since he came back from the IL. He's been great. He's been more than great. Fernando has been the Fernando that we have wanted him to be all year long. And pretty much for the most part, when he's healthy, has been. You know, there's been struggles there. But right before he got injured, he was on fire. And now he's hitting home runs at Dodger Stadium. Fernando's doing, you know, he's doing what he needs to do as Fernando. Now, Ha-Seong Kim on the other side, Ha-Seong Kim is not Fernando Tatis Jr. Ha-Seong Kim is someone who can't change the game in ways that Fernando can. So when I say that Ha-Seong Kim is going to mess up the flow, I actually mean that he'll mess up the flow of maybe the guys that are already playing. He's been cold now, as they said yesterday on the roundtable, for a month and a half at this point. He has not played in a professional baseball game in a month and a half. So what are you going to do? You're going to bring back Ha-Seong Kim. You're going to put him in the lineup. You're going to have him get back to normal, back to major league ready hitting. No, it's not going to work that way. You're not going to just put him back in the lineup for the playoffs either. You got to make sure that you got to take advantage of every single matchup during the playoffs. And the Padres sort of did that. You know, they kind of showed their playoff baseball offense last night when they were scratching out runs. The runs are very expensive in the playoffs. And if you are able to get 2-3 runs with the bullpen and the rotation that the Padres have, you should win that game, I think. And they're built for it. I mean, Luis Arraez, he has struggled in the last couple, maybe the last week or so. But Luis Arraez is a hitting machine. He is built for the playoffs. He is built to get on base, and the guys behind him are built to drive him in. So we saw a little bit before the wheels came off last night. We saw a little bit of the Padres offense and what it could resemble in the playoffs. I mean, these last three games against the Dodgers have actually felt like playoff games, and last night was no different. I'll ask Sam Levy at 5 p.m. about that, whether or not those games were feeling like they were playoff games or not. All right, we have the countdown. And we also need to get your traffic report. So traffic first, and then Tony rejoins me for the countdown.
From the 97.3 The Fan Traffic Center, here's Kelly Danick.
Traffic is brought to you by Alesmith 394 Pale Ale. Looks like a bunch of people get to spend part of their weekend getting their vehicles in for some servicing. Numerous stalled vehicles, one in middle lanes on southbound 5 right before the 52, also east 8 before Texas Street. Stalled car in lane next to the slow lane. South 5 at the North 15 connector, a stall over to the right shoulder. Also a stall eastbound 78 before Sycamore. This has got the right lane blocked. And we got a crash being moved out of middle lanes on northbound 15 before Via Rancho Parkway. Alesmith 394 Pale Ale, the official rally pint of the playoff push. Catch all the San Diego baseball action this week at the Alesmith Tasting Room in Miramar. Enjoy specials on 394 and more while you cheer on your team with fellow fans. Don't miss the excitement. On this weekend, go to the Miramar Air Show and stop in afterwards. I'm Kelly Danick with Gwen and Chris, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
It's now time for Gwen and Chris to rank their top five of the day.
Gonna grip and rip as usual.
But this isn't just a regular top five list.
I love it. It sounds sadistic, but I love it.
This is The Countdown. And it starts right now on 97.3 The Fan.
You know, sometimes, Tony, it's really, really difficult to find a topic for The Countdown. We could sit here for 20 minutes and name a billion different things, and we never find it until it finally pops into our head, like today's Countdown, which is going to be the top five things you like about postseason baseball, which I think is obviously fitting. And before we get into it, if you love Mediterranean food, try Spiro's for authentic Mediterranean cuisine in Coronado or La Jolla. For dining or takeout options, visit Spiro'sCuisine.com.
Number five.
I guess I'll start, Tony, if that's all right with you. My number five is going to be the fact that when playoff baseball gets here, the air is crisp, the sun is going down earlier and earlier, and you feel fall is here. You know that winter's just around the corner, and I love that feeling of fall being here. So that's my number five. I knew you were going to laugh at that one. The rest of them are baseball related, but I just know it.
You clearly could come up with four there, and you just winged five there. I like that. That's very.
There's a creative human being
very,
in me.
Very freestyle of you right there. Number five on my list. I don't know what you call these things, but I just call them the 4th of July banners that they have. That reminds me of postseason every time I see them. And so, therefore, I don't like when they use them at the beginning of the year. I only like when I see them this time of year because that means it's postseason. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's, I don't even know how you describe them. Like the,
I know what you're saying. They're like little red, they look white, like Fourth of July banners. I don't know
how to describe them either. But that reminds me of playoff baseball. Number five.
That is that's a better one than fall is on the way.
Number four.
I do love fall though. Soup and
there's just a way better way you could have said it. But
and grilled cheeses at night. It's just good
stuff.
Doing
postseason baseball.
Because when postseason baseball reaches us, that means that I'm eating grilled cheese and soup for dinner, okay? You can't eat grilled cheese and soup during the summer. It's too hot.
You locked in a juvenile detention center with grilled cheese and
I might
what
be.
Is going on?
I might be. I also eat Fruity Pebbles for breakfast and all of that good stuff. All right. My number four has something to do with baseball. And it's just like the anticipation and the big time feel of each game. Because you know each game's important. You know that the season is on the line for these games. And it's just like the importance of everything is much more elevated than it is during the regular season. So little things become big things. And I love that about the drama of postseason baseball.
Number four on my list is kind of along the lines of fall weather, right? You see the air coming out of guys' mouth, especially you're back east and in one of those Philly or New York settings. Pitcher's on the mound. He's locked in. Steam's rolling off of his hat because it's cold out. It's colder outside. You see a lot more turtlenecks, long sleeves. One of my favorite parts. I mean, you can catch, it's not solely specific to playoff baseball because you can catch that earlier in the season too, but it's just a different feel come October when you see some of that gear. I often think of the Guardians, but at the time the Indians. Kenny Lofton with his red turtleneck, long sleeve joint. That's playoff baseball to me.
Are you eating grilled cheese and soup?
No. Eating grilled cheese and soup.
Okay. When you guys go to a cold city for the playoffs, I need you during the game to be eating grilled cheese and soup. I'm going to have Dave Marcus do this for you.
Number three. That sounds like a Dave Marcus thing.
Yeah. So, yeah. Now I'm going to have to go home and eat grilled cheese and soup because now I'm starving for it. My number three is like, I guess I'm basing this off of the games that I went to in 2022 when the Padres were in the playoffs, and it's the energy of the home crowd because you can feel it together. Like that game against the Dodgers, game five of the NLDS, you often say it, a lot of people often say it, but it felt like the whole stadium was kind of like meshing into one. It felt like a big old, brotherhood, sisterhood type thing. So I like the roar of the crowd, the feeling that we're all together in this, and just the euphoria that happens when your team wins.
Number three on my list is the strategy. The games are with runs at a premium. You just see strategy a lot different. It's probably more extreme because, you know, you're in a situation where a loss can send you home. And that's so much different than the 162 that we play during the regular season, where you know you got a game tomorrow and there's another one after and another one after. And so you're trying to, you know, keep people healthy during mm-hmm. that time. And so there's so many more things that factor into it. Those factors go out the window when come playoffs. I mean, you have kept everybody healthy by doing what you did in the regular season so you can unleash them come playoff time. And so I just love that the strategy gets tighter. The downside is you get a lot of new millions of new managers and hitting coaches and fielding coaches and umpires. That's the downfall, but I do enjoy the strategy of it.
All right. Number two. This is just a hater one, but when the team that you don't like is eliminated, and especially if the team that you don't like is eliminated in heartbreaking fashion, like back to 2022, when the Dodgers were eliminated, that was incredible because no one thought they could do it and everybody picked the Dodgers, and I don't like the Dodgers, so when they went home, it made me feel pretty good. Hater comment, yes.
Yes, indeed it was. Number two on my list is a little bit like your three, but it's not necessarily the home crowd, you know, being into it. It's the dynamic of how the home crowd can be shut up or can be energized, right? I mean, we go back to 22 games, game three, right? Game two, right? Padres lose game one. They come back. They win game two in L.A. And, you know, it went from it being a raucous crowd after winning game one to, I mean, the goose landing on the field.
Oh, yeah.
And then Padres putting up some runs and it just being silent. And the energy was really determined by what the Padres were doing offensively. I guess it depends on how you look at it, right? I mean, I guess the Dodgers didn't do their job. They allowed the Padres. But however you want to look at it, the crowd is controlled by what is happening to the team, right? Their team was getting beat.
Yeah.
And so, in that case, the home crowd wasn't any good, you know. But then the following night, as you mentioned, the crowd was amazing as they returned to San Diego and put it on them. And so, I just love that dynamic, how You can just take a crowd out of it with a crooked number early, and you can keep them out of it as long as you can keep their team off the board.
That's a good one. That is a good one. The silencing of the crowd is a very good one.
Number one.
My number one is going to be when players do superhuman things in the playoffs, mostly the World Series. And I'm just going to reference Madison Bumgarner because that was the first guy that came to mind. But when he was the 2014 World Series MVP, he went 2-0. He gave up .43. He had a .43 ERA. He gave up only one run in 21 World Series innings. He came back on short rest. Just superhuman stuff like that I love, because you already have the best baseball players in the world playing in this game. And then when you can go one step further than the best baseball players in the world, that's what impresses me, and that's what's fun to remember.
Interesting. Number one on my list is just the high level of play from pitchers to hitters to infielders. I mean, everybody. There is just something about the playoffs that heightens your focus, and it heightens your awareness. And in baseball, when those things are heightened on the field by everyone, you get a really, really high-level game being played. Velocity goes up. We see guys laying off of pitches they don't normally lay off, or they don't lay off of often. And I just appreciate that. I got a chance to experience it myself in 2008, and you can feel it. And it applied to me. Although I was nervous as hell, I felt like I was. As fast as I'd ever been, I felt great. And that's all being in that atmosphere. Like, you could, like, feel it. Like, in Philadelphia, I remember sitting in the dugout, like, looking up, and all these white towels are, like, waving. And, like, you can feel, like, the energy. Like, you can literally feel it. And walking onto the on-deck circle and into the box, you're trying to harness that, because it can overwhelm you easily. Like, you can just be taken over by it. And that is, like, the fun part, is, like, trying to – I mean, it's not fun in the time. You're, like, worried. You're trying to do a job, and you're, like, trying to keep yourself in this right space. But looking back on it, like, that's the charge right there.
Yeah. That's what you play for, right?
Right.
Is that 100%. Little feeling right there.
Yep.
All right. Well, Padres still have 3 regular season games left against the Diamondbacks, but they are headed to the playoffs. We could say that for sure. So we'll be feeling all of these things very soon, especially my grilled cheese and soup next week. All right. When we get back, we have Adam versus the fans. Braden is not here today, so we're going to go Adam versus the fans, 833-288-0973 for your chance to win some Eric Clapton tickets. Also, qualification for Las Vegas.